and welcome to Money Trail with me, Amir Arafat. Today, the Carlyle Group, the Bushes, and the Iron Triangle.
The Carlyle Group is one of America's 10 biggest military contracting firms. And it's a firm that specializes in what they call crony capitalism. That is, that this group specializes in making money for its investors by getting access to the world's leading decision makers. Now, it was founded in the late 80s, if I'm not mistaken, by a fellow named Rubenstein. And in the 90s, it started bringing on board the Bush family and the Bin Laden family, which is kind of amusing. George H.W. Bush became a principal, a member of the board, and a key figure, along with the representatives of the Bin Laden family in Saudi Arabia, which is the biggest company in Saudi Arabia. It's a huge construction firm, and people often call the Bin Laden company the Saudi face of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. That is, that it's very, very tightly interwoven with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in its construction projects. So the Carlyle Group, as it grew in the 90s, it took on George H.W. Bush, who repeatedly met with members of the Bin Laden family as this company was growing. It also brought in Donald Rumsfeld, who would become the Secretary of Defense in the Bush II administration, an old crony of the Bush family. And it at one point was led by Frank Carlucci, who remained with it through the 9/11 period. Frank Carlucci is the former head of the Central Intelligence Agency, and he was Donald Rumsfeld's roommate in college. So essentially, this became a very, very tight, closely connected group of people. It was essentially an interface between the Bush family and their financial sponsors, like this Rubenstein guy who started it, and the Saudi money connected with the Bin Laden family, the biggest corporation in Saudi Arabia.
What is new about Carlyle is the size and the dimension of their success. My understanding is they are now the 11th or 12th largest defense contractor, a multi-billion dollar annual enterprise with an almost obscenely high profit margin.
Obviously, the defense side is very important because it is politically connected. The political priorities of the people are also in the forefront. But I think primarily it's where they can make their money. Carlyle is very special because they're not simply shareholders who are intent on making a profit, but they're also part of the political establishment. So the effect of their investments on the position of the United States internationally plays a very important role.
Have you heard of the Iron Triangle? The confluence of the White House and Congress and top big business, such as the Carlyle Group and the Pentagon, all coming together. The modern day version of what President Dwight Eisenhower once termed the military-industrial complex, where former presidents, former secretaries of defense, former heads of CIA, and top officials from around the world represent the big business. Most egregious case of which could be alluded back to the George W. Bush term in office. His father, Papa Bush, was around the world selling contracts.
If you look on the Carlyle website today, you don't see George Bush Sr.'s name anywhere, although he is working for the Carlyle Group.
We saw it simply an opportunity to take advantage of Washington and the people here and the access that people had to transactions.
George Bush Sr. is a fundraiser. He is the kind of guy who can go into Kuwait or Saudi Arabia, where they love him, pack the house, and get these guys to open up their wallets and give money to the Carlyle Group. That's his role. But if you look in over the history of this company, George Bush Sr. has clearly met with business leaders one-on-one, met with political leaders in South Korea and in Saudi Arabia. And that would lead one to believe that he's doing much, much more than just giving speeches for the Carlyle Group.
I've said that it's the worst kind of conflict of interest, particularly when your son is the president of the United States. So while Junior is talking to heads of state about war and other weighty matters, Papa is talking to them or having conversations with them about Carlyle. And it's just, I find it disgusting.
They guess you could say it's the land of opportunity, where you can have your father on the board of an organization like Carlyle Group, running around the world selling contracts, while you are the president of the United States, one directing all kinds of contracts with respect to national security, protection from terrorism, whatever moniker you want to put on it, but directing billions of dollars that way, and also sitting in a geopolitical position around the world to direct the various countries that your daddy is visiting with his hat in hand to give him money and buy his products.
The Iron Triangle is in some ways a uniquely American phenomenon. It's the confluence of the military, big business, and politics. And the combination of these three things is something that a number of U.S. presidents in the past have warned against. In particular, Dwight Eisenhower was very upfront about warning against the possibility of creating a military-industrial complex. By that, he means a group of a business built around defense and military that becomes so large and so powerful that it's actually able to influence the politics of war.
For most of us, war means misery, devastation, loss of lives, but not for the likes of Carlyle. Shortly after its inception, we had the Persian Gulf War I.
At the end of the Reagan administration, we were very interested in Frank Carlucci.
I will name as the next Secretary of Defense the best qualified man in America to carry on CAPS work, Frank Carlucci.
When Frank Carlucci came on board, he was coming straight from the Pentagon as Secretary of Defense. He had just, Reagan's term had just finished and Carlucci retired. He came on board and really took them in a completely new direction into defense. This was a time, bear in mind, where defense properties were worth almost nothing because the Cold War had just ended. And this huge military buildup that had taken place during the 80s had suddenly evaporated, which marked a great opportunity, and no one knew that better than Frank Carlucci, who had been in the Pentagon watching this whole trend happen firsthand. So Carlucci came on board and was able to take Carlyle 180 degrees in another direction. Sure enough, a year, 2 years later, the Gulf War hit, and everybody knows that wartime is boom time for the defense industry. So once the Gulf War hit, these properties skyrocketed again, and Carlyle made a ton of money. They did very, very well. They really cleaned up during that 3 or 4 year swing. And after that, Carlyle said, hey, you know, having these politicians on board is pretty great. I mean, they know things that nobody else knows. In fact, you know, Frank Carlucci was setting up policies while he was in office as Secretary of Defense that he's now capitalizing on as chairman of Carlyle Group. And, you know, it's a brilliant scheme if you think about it. You set up the policies, you leave office, you go into business, and then you exploit those policies.
Well, one of the ways that Carlyle and other insider corporations are able to maintain their control of contracts, having them directed to them, and sort of meshing together a synchronistic business plan with other objectives of imperialism, whether expressed as political or geopolitical objectives of Washington, financial objectives of the banks, say, or of Wall Street. One of the ways that they do this is by circulating not just dollars, although there is plenty of that.
They picked up George Bush, James Baker.
Richard Darman is over there, who was a former budget director in the White House.
Arthur Levitt, the former SEC chairman. William Kennard, the former FCC chairman.
In Europe, you have former Prime Minister of England, John Major. Karl Otto Paul, from the head of the German Central Bank. Eberhard Kuhnheim, who's the chairman of the supervisory board of BMW. The Asia part, former Prime Minister of Thailand. Former president of the Philippines, Fidel Ramos. And at one point, also, the former former Prime Minister of South Korea was on their board, a man named Mr. Park, who used to head up the largest steel company in South Korea.
The list just goes on and on and on. So these guys carry a tremendous amount of influence, and they are able to predict trends in global markets, predict trends in political shifts, and in some ways, and this is the sort of the most insidious part, and if you want to be cynical about the Carlyle Group, you have to be concerned about their ability to influence these trends and actually affect change in government policy, which would positively affect their investments.
David Rubenstein, who is presently the head of the Carlyle Group, he was in the Clinton administration, was a big fundraiser also for the Clinton White House, but was also close to be the political elites in the country being as they are. There was also the interface between both Democratic and Republican politics. And Carlyle's are a holding company. They've been investing all over the world, some of the biggest investments in Asia, as well as in Europe. And they are definitely a power player within the nation's capital. The political connections that have been established by people in the Carlyle Group, of course, go with them in their business opportunities. And therefore, you have a very clear case of the swinging door where people go from government into business using their government connections, using the knowledge they have gathered in order to enhance their portfolios.
Remember 9/11 and the official Bush story of the event? Well, it turns out as Junior was pointing all fingers at Osama bin Laden, Bush Senior's Carlyle Group, Papa, was holding meetings with bin Laden family just a couple miles away from the buildings.
On September 11th, in somewhat of a horrible coincidence, the Carlyle Group was holding their annual investor meeting here in Washington, D.C., at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. George Bush Sr. was at the meeting. The Carlyle Group said that he left the night before September 11th and was on his way to some location in the Midwest. And I talked to someone who was at the meeting, and they told me that the whole crew of Carlyle, including Frank Carlucci and James Baker and David Rubenstein, along with Shafiq bin Laden, who was a representative of the bin Laden family and their fortunes, were all in the same room together watching the events of September 11th take place.
Many people find it suspicious that on the morning of September 11th, 2001, Osama bin Laden's brother was at a board meeting in Washington, D.C., 9 in the morning, right when the attacks were underway, with George H.W. Bush, although some reports say that George H.W. Bush had been there at the meeting the previous day and wasn't present on September 11th. That's a disputed issue. But Bush was certainly meeting with Osama bin Laden's brother either on the 10th or actually on the morning of September 11th, 2001 in Washington, D.C. at this Carlyle Group meeting. Now, Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney first called attention to this in the fall of 2001 when she grilled Donald Rumsfeld on the floor of the House of Representatives and essentially accused him of being involved in perpetrating the 9/11 attacks.
Bin Laden and Bush families were interlocked, aside from sitting on the boards of various, not just Carlyle, various corporations together. They famously had large family dinners together and other things. And so the very idea, and there's the claims, that they have credibility that planes were cleared for the members of the bin Laden family to cut town after the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon because the American officials, the Bush family, whomever, didn't want any bin Ladens to be caught in the United States and, the target of ugly mobs as they were holding out Osama bin Laden's face as the, face of evil and the person that brought these attacks.
The Carlyle Group was not just wheeling and dealing with the bin Laden family. They had bigger, better, even fatter deals going on with Saudi princes years before 9/11.
The relationships between Carlyle and Saudi Arabia began when Steve Norris developed a very nascent relationship with Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, who is a very wealthy, very flamboyant Saudi Arabian prince who loves the United States and loves to invest his money in the United States.
There was always a running joke. You know, there's always been periods where there were capital, excess capital, and people would try to figure out how to access that. For a while it was the Japanese, and it's always been the Kuwaitis and so forth.
And now it was the Saudis.
And that was the Saudis, and people would say, let's try to find a prince to do something.
The big spur was the Gulf War, and people seeing, you know, Bush Sr. and James Baker as the heroes of the Gulf War.
The bargain that was struck basically gave the United States preferred access to Saudi energy in return for protection against foreign foes. And when the requirement arose in 1990, the United States kept its end of the bargain, stepped forward and helped to defend the kingdom and then liberate Kuwait. And the result was that there was an enormous outburst of good feeling in both countries. Trade boomed, and the military relationship, of course, became stronger than ever before.
The Saudi people close to the Saudi royal family, as a favor to their benefactors, Bush and Baker, encouraged private Saudi business people to invest in the Carlyle Group.
A lot of what I was doing was trying to convince Prince Fahad Abdullah, who I think was an Air Force general, but also he was the minister in charge of the offset program, that Carlyle would be a good financial advisor.
So Carlyle was managing this program, which made them, in some ways, a gatekeeper to the investment community in Saudi Arabia. I mean, they knew where the money was coming from and where it was going to. So they had a very unique position in Saudi Arabia and grew very close with the royal family, with the bin Laden family, and they were able to really cozy up with the Saudis and get a lot of investments from there.
And this became a huge arena for corruption, because instead of just paying a bribe to somebody in the royal family, now you could set them up in business. And you could say, well, this business is part of our offset commitment to you that goes with this arms sale. And so we're going to take, you know, this son of this prince and create a little company for him that's going to be funded by Boeing. But all Boeing's doing is recycling the money out of the arms deal. So they get $9 billion, they kick some of it back. So Carlyle, I think, was brought in to try to put some legitimacy on this process.
They say honesty is best policy. Well, not exactly in the U.S. Congress. Let's take a look at the story of how a brave congresswoman buried her own political career with her own hands, pointing fingers at the Carlyle Group, saying things she shouldn't have.
One fateful day, we were having a hearing on the upcoming defense authorization legislation, which is going to authorize almost an unprecedented amount of money for defense spending, $400 billion.
After September 11th, huge defense money was unearthed.
Our men and women deserve the best weapons, the best equipment, and the best training. And therefore, I've asked Congress for a one-year increase of more than $48 billion for national defense, the largest increase in a generation.
Carlyle bought United Defense, which is one of the largest military contractors in the country, in 1997. And they went on to work with United Defense on a very specific program called the Crusader.
Members of the Pentagon had come and testified on Capitol Hill and said, no. We don't want the Crusader because it doesn't fit in with our priorities. But as a part of that $48.1 billion increase in the $400 billion defense request that came down from the president, there inside there was money for the Crusader missile.
We need to be agile and mobile, and therefore we need to replace aging aircraft and get ready to be able to defend freedom with the best equipment possible.
Then I started doing my research and I learned that was the Crusader missile was manufactured by United Defense Industries, and that that company was owned by the Carlyle Group, and that the president's father was on the payroll of the Carlyle Group. And I said to myself, now, in all of the ethics briefings that we've had in Congress, this is something that we're supposed to stay away from in our own personal conduct. So when the time came for us to vote, our committee to vote on the defense authorization bill, I voted no. And I also wrote a dissent, and prominently featured in my dissent is mention of the Carlyle Group and its relationship to the Crusader missile. And then that's when everything began to fall apart.
What ended up happening was a wave of sentiment against the Crusader began to build on Capitol Hill and within the Department of Defense. And this was something that the Carlyle Group didn't foresee. And they began to wield their influence. They sent people around to key politicians, representatives, and senators, began lobbying very heavily, and was able to keep this gun program alive despite an overwhelming sentiment against it.
They didn't realize that there would be this ensuing scrutiny of the request, and therefore, when a little bit of sunshine, which is a great disinfectant, was shed on this particular request and the relationship between the current president and the former president and this particular weapon system, maybe at that point it was decided we'd better not deal with this, and so they didn't.
Eventually the noise around that got so strong that there was really nothing left to do but to cancel this gun program. And Donald Rumsfeld did cancel the program in a very public public ceremony, but not until the gun had been kept alive long enough that the company, United Defense, was able to go public. It did very well, and the Carlyle Group made $237 million in that one day.
What happened to you?
Well, I was excoriated in the press. I was vilified. I was called unpatriotic. And then a very strange thing happened in my election. I'm a Democrat. What the Republicans did was the Republicans went out and got a black woman who was a Republican to run as a Democrat in my Democratic primary. And then 47,000 Republicans crossed over and voted in my Democratic primary. And of course, they had done their homework and their research, and they realized that generally on average, I would get about 48,000 votes on a primary. Generally on average, look, you know, give or take 100 here, 100 there, but generally it's about 48,000. So what the Republicans did, and this was not just a mere accident. This, of course, was planned. And they made sure that at least 47,000, and we can name them, we have their names, addresses, telephone numbers, so we know 47,000 to match the number of Democrats that would generally turn out, voted in my election. And of course, I couldn't, of course, in the circumstances like that, come out on the with the longer stick when the election tally had ended.
Well, thank you for watching. Always follow the money trail with me, Amir Arfa.